Welcome to the You Love and You Learn podcast, the place to learn about all things love, relationships, relationship anxiety, and to deconstruct the one-size-fits-all narrative of what it means to be in a happy relationship. I'm your host, Sarah Yudkin, a relationship anxiety coach who's on a mission to discuss the nuances of love and relationships that I wish someone would have shared with me years ago. My goal with each episode is for you to leave with an expanded definition of love and relationships and with practices to carry with you in your life and relationships on a day-to-day basis. I'm so grateful to have you here. Welcome back, everybody. If you are someone who wants to deepen their self-trust and start turning inward instead of looking at everything and everyone else around you for the answers, then I'm so excited for you to hear today's conversation. I got to sit down with Mikkel Kristen, who is a faith-based relationship anxiety coach. And after Mikkel personally experienced the pain of relationship anxiety and went through her own transformation, she knew that she wanted to help other women walk through the same journey. And she loves helping women build strong senses of self-worth so that they can relax in their relationship and create the life that they desire, all while involving faith and God in the process. So it was really fun to get to sit down with another relationship anxiety coach, someone who has walked through a similar journey. Really excited for you to hear this episode, and let's get into it. Hi, Mikkel. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, it's so good to be here with you. I'm excited to chat.
I know. I feel like this conversation is overdue because, you know, we've both been in the relationship anxiety coaching space for so long and you have so much wisdom to share. So I'm really excited to dive in. And I was just saying before we press record, I don't even know your full story. Like, I feel like I've seen bits and pieces from your page, but I'd love to hear a little bit more because it sounds like our stories are a little bit unique as far as when relationship anxiety or OCD kind of came into your life and then how you realize like, wow, this is something that I need to kind of work on and turn inward for.
Yeah, totally. Okay, man, I'm like, story, where to start? So like my husband and I, actually, we go way back. You ready for this?
Let's do
We have baby pictures together. I swear it's not arranged. So we've known each other for a really long time. Like our families were friends growing up. And my husband and I were like, kind of just best friends through high school and like, you know, kind of dated some, kind of did, kind of didn't, you know, it was always that he was interested. And I was like, maybe, I don't know, you know, very avoidant, right? And then we kind of went off to college and went separate ways. He went on a mission for our church and I started dating around and dating different people. And I was like, wait a minute. He treats me really good and I love to be with him. And all the other times I was dating, like it just didn't compare to what we had. And so of course my brain's like, certainty, there we go. He's the one. No, it does not stop there. Right. But basically we reconnected after he got home from his mission. But basically as we initially started dating, at first my anxiety was very much kind of that more anxious attachment where I was very like, well, does he still like me? Is he still interested? Right. Cause I had this experience of not really being interested in or liking anyone, other people I was dating. And so I was very like invested in it working with us, right? Mm-hmm. And so we did start dating. And as time went on and I became more and more solid and like, he's not going anywhere. He likes me and he wants to be with me. Then all of a sudden, all the fears of like, oh, well, does he actually like me? It all flipped. And then it was like, oh, but do you like him, right?
Yep.
And thank you. All of my avoidance came up. And it was the beginning of a lot of work I didn't realize, right? You know, you think it's all about figuring out if this is the person and you think it's all about them. And like, okay, I just need to figure out if it's right with them. And then all these doubts are going to dissipate, which is not how it works. I really dealt with a lot of avoidance and but meanwhile, knowing like, you know, kind of seeing how good our relationship was and how like logically it really made sense in a lot of ways and what we wanted in life and the friendship that we had. And so, you know, it just kind of would push through a lot of these thoughts and we took next steps towards engagement. And that's really for me when anxiety hit, where it was kind of like trickling in as we were dating. Engagement, it was full force there. And at that point, you know, had no idea what relationship anxiety was. And so I was looking to everyone outside of me to figure out what was going on. And so I was, I was praying a lot and asking God. I was Googling a lot. I was asking all my friends. I was asking, even in those subtle ways, right, where you look at other people's relationships and you're like, does this add up? Is our relationship like that? Like theirs looks good. Is ours as good as theirs? Like sometimes my roommates would be like, oh my gosh, he's such a catch. And I would be like, yeah, you know what I mean? Feeling all good about my relationship. And then other times my roommates would be like, ooh, he said this thing, or there would be criticism of him too. And so I found like very much the way I felt about him, the way I felt about our relationship was like this, right? It was very up and down. When I got validation from other people, feeling confirmed in my choice, I felt great. But then there's the flip side of that coin where there's people saying negative things, or there's something that maybe seems off or whatever. And then you feel like, oh crap, is this the wrong thing? So I rode that roller coaster for a long time until I learned more about self-trust, which is what we're going to dive into a little more. But the first person I heard about relationship anxiety from was Cheryl Paul. And I remember just like hearing that was enough to give me the confidence to continue to move forward in the relationship, just knowing like it matched what I was experiencing. And one of the things I heard her say that changed my life was that people with anxiety tend to take other people's stories and make them their own. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's what I had literally been doing, not just in my relationship, but my entire life. Whenever I would hear other people's stories, I just automatically would assume that was what was going to happen to me, especially scary stories, right? When you hear scary stories about relationship. That concept for me, I think, was like the very tip of beginning to understand, wait, just because I hear someone else say something or someone else think something doesn't mean that has to be my experience. And that just opened up a whole new world to like, maybe I get to be in charge of what I'm deciding rather than everybody else.
Yeah, so much powerful information in that story. And it's so true about how we can flip from, does this person want to be with me? And then suddenly, as soon as you realize everything is safe and I'm getting everything that I wanted, like the person does care, it's almost then that is this big reaction of, oh gosh, well, wait, if that means I'm gonna have everything that I wanted, that means I actually have to live that now. And that means it's a decision to make and it feels more permanent. So I can relate to that a lot. And the self-trust piece, thanks for bringing that in, where it's like you're looking to everyone around you of, oh my gosh, what did they think? Or this thing happened to this person, or this thing looks better in someone else's relationship. So that sets us up for the topic today, which is kind of internalizing other people's stories and how to change that pattern towards more self-trust. So I don't know if you want to start by sharing more of like examples of how you've seen this show up for yourself or in your clients, but I know that I have some of people bringing me examples that they've seen either in people that they know or social media, and then the stories that we tell ourselves about how it should affect our relationship. So maybe we should just set the stage of some examples of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I love that. Well, one thing I think, because again, it would show up in like teeny tiny details. I would notice this even outside of my relationship. Just any choice that I made, I would really look towards other people. I couldn't just go to the restaurant and pick off something on the menu. I would be like, does my friend think this is a good idea to get this thing? So I would like do it in super micro ways. So obviously it made sense in big things like a relationship. But even like in the process of wedding planning, I remember a lot of looking at, oh, when does everyone else think we should get married? And we picked a date, and then his dad had an opinion, and my parents had an opinion, right? And then it was like, oh, well, maybe that timeline is better than our timeline. And just really kind of being in the wedding planning process, trusting other people's opinions on how we should do it more than our own. And kind of on a flip, I've seen this, one of my clients just got engaged. And when we started working together, she was, I think people do this a lot with relationship anxiety, where they're very focused on the timeline, where they're like, oh, well, other people at this point are normally engaged, or other people have normally like moved in together by this point, very much looking at other people's timelines in the relationship. And at the beginning, she definitely was in that pressure, we need to figure out if we're getting engaged or not. And it's cool to see now, like as we've spent a lot of time working together and they're taking that next step, how relaxed she is. She's very like, yeah, you know what? This is a lot longer of a time frame than I would have thought. And like, yeah, we're gonna give ourselves this much time with our engagement. And just that she's like, it feels so good because I'm not trying to do it the way that everyone else is saying it should be done. this is the way that works for us. And I just thought that was such a cool contrast to see, where if you could really see like that self-trust in her as she released that expectation of timelines and just leaned into what's the way we want to do this.
Totally. Yeah, that's a really cool example. And I can relate to that where you're just comparing when should something happen. Like Nate and I used to be, I wouldn't say long distance, like we were 2 hours away, but it was far enough that we had to coordinate. And I remember when we were still in our relationship at the beginning stages, people would ask, when are you going to move to the same city? Or like, when are you guys going to do this and that? I would be kind of focused on, like, well, when should we? Like, oh, it's been a year, it's been a year and a half, it's been 2 years. Like, we should be maybe have a more of a plan. But eventually, I had to throw all plans out the window. And now we're engaged, but it's been 7 years that we're together. And that timeline to many people on the outside looking in is like, what? 7 years? Why are you waiting so long? But I think eventually I had to realize my timeline has nothing to do with anything else that anyone else is doing. But it took some confidence of constantly seeing that the external comparisons that I was making had nothing to do with my relationship, which we'll definitely get into. But I just want to share my own experience of how this comes up because I know it's really common, especially for someone who has anxiety and really wants to get things right.
Yes, totally. And it's so interesting too, because I think if you flip the script and you look at like where those people are coming from, because you were saying that, I'm like, oh yeah, those people are probably just like, they care about you, or they're like a little bit nosy and curious, right? That's where our friends and family are coming from, is they're just like, I don't know, everyone really likes to know the updates on relationships, right? I mean, I think that's why a lot of people like reality TV. It's like, oh, what's going on with so and so? But it's like, it literally has nothing to do with how well our relationship is going, right? I think in the end, it's like when we're really confident about like, this is the way that I want to do it, not like the right way or the way it should be, but this is the way that works for me and my partner, then like what other people are asking and saying, it kind of almost becomes almost more irrelevant to us.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to get into later some of the ways to build that trust and confidence, but I want to bring in some other types of examples here. And for anyone listening, you can probably relate to having this own experience, but talking about seeing other people, whether it's a celebrity couple, you mentioned reality TV. Like I got a message from someone in the You Love and You Learn community, like a past client, who noticed that there was a bachelorette couple that broke up that had been married and they got a divorce. And she was kind of looking at, okay, well, in this relationship, there were maybe signs that people were pointing to that they shouldn't be together, and then it actually happened. So does that mean XYZ? Or it could be you've shared with me that there's family or friends maybe that you've seen that have had that, and then you take that on. Oh, this couple or pairing, they had these qualities. So does that mean something about my relationships too? So talk a little bit more about either your experience or what you've seen in clients with our tendency to want to internalize those stories from other people.
Totally. I think where I noticed it for me is I had a friend a while back who was also experiencing relationship anxiety, and we kind of had gone through it together, and it was something we really connected on. And later to find out that she was going through the process of divorce, and it like definitely like, ooh, shock, right? Because I think, you know, again, when you connect to someone else's story where there's areas where you feel similarity, oh, we have this similar fear or doubt, or even like with a celebrity couple, oh, they both have this fun connection, kind of like me and my partner, or whatever it is that we see in other couples that kind of resonates for us, then it's easy when we see that one similarity, that one thread, we start assuming all the rest of it. So, oh, my one friend that also struggled with some anxiety, like she got divorced. And so then the temptation, I feel like, is for my brain was to be like, oh my gosh, well, then that must be what's going to happen in my relationship, right? Which makes a lot of sense because our brains want to predict the future. They don't like that unknown. And so, like, there's no way to predict the future, but it kind of feels like we can if we just copy other people's stories. It's like, oh, well, maybe this is how it goes. But I feel like breakups is a really big one I've seen with my clients, where witnessing that in someone else, especially if they feel like their relationship was similar in some way, they'll have a hard time almost separating and recognizing, wait, but we're not the same and there are differences and their choices aren't my choices. It can just kind of go to, oh my gosh, well, we're probably going to break up too.
Yeah, that protective mechanism of trying to stay safe and keep it certain. Yeah, I've had a lot of clients. This is a story that's come up a lot where they were friends with another couple, like best friends with another couple, and then that couple decided not to be together. And it's almost like by association, you think something that was so certain, or I thought was so certain, and it was part of my identity, the way that I viewed the world, then that no longer felt safe or felt comfortable or certain. And so now it's almost like your reality is shaken up and you feel like something is no longer safe in your situation, even though it actually, like you said, it's not a direct copy paste from their relationship to yours, but it can be really hard when there's a lot of fear coming up within you that already exists. I already am scared of divorce, and now I'm seeing more evidence that it can happen. And so it's understandable why that would feel threatening.
Yeah, I really like how you pointed that out too. It's we have a sense of there's certainty in that relationship where we kind of, again, if we're trusting other people more than ourselves. And so if we see another relationship, we're like, oh, theirs is good. They have it figured out. Yeah, it kind of crumbles that certainty almost when we see that. Oh, maybe things aren't exactly like how we thought in that relationship.
Yeah, definitely. So, oh, go ahead.
I just want to say one other example, and this is more broad, but I think just where that lack of self-trust, we really see, like, you know, we talked about timeline ending of relationships, but I think kind of in the middle is just the way relationships go. I think this is kind of where a lot, majority of relationship anxiety manifests, is looking at how you do your relationship, just the day-to-day, the way when you come home and see each other and, you know, are you like giving each other a big hug and kiss? Or, you know, my parents, I feel like every night would come home and they would sit down and they would talk for like 30 minutes. And so that's the way to do it. My husband gets home, he doesn't really want to talk. He needs time to decompress and unwind. And so just that little dynamic to look at that and be like, oh, the way we're doing it is wrong. My parents' way is right. And so I think that's a big area that just any little interaction or like dynamic in our relationship. I think when we lack that self-trust and we see it's different than other people's relationship dynamics, it's easy to make it wrong.
Yeah, that's such a good example. Just even like being out and about. Like the other day, this is an interesting example. Like I just talked about this on another episode, actually. So people will hear this story multiple times now, but I was feeling a little bit disconnected from Nate. And what come to find, fast forward to the end of the story, we had different definitions of what quality time is. And so he felt like we were having a lot of great quality time, and I was craving a little bit more like shared activity where we're like doing something different or unique. So, but before that happened, before we got to that outcome and before we actually talked about it and I expressed how I was feeling, I was driving around that day running errands, not with him. And I saw that there were these other couples who were like out walking on the street, holding hands, and they looked like they were just having this cozy morning together. And who knows, like it could have literally been their first date, or it could, not that that matters, but like it could have just been their first date. It could be best friends that they were just arm in arm. You don't even know what the deal is. But I immediately took that and was like, this couple spends so much great quality time together. And what was interesting to me is when me and Nate are really connected, I don't find myself looking as much outwardly for that other story. But on that day, because I was feeling that disconnection, it was almost like I was looking to confirm the ways that we were doing something wrong and that other people were doing something right. And I took on these whole extra stories about what it all meant and what it had to mean. So it was just really interesting, like the timing of the comparisons or the timing of the internalizing when it can feel more, I guess, alarming to the anxiety.
Yeah, that is such a good connection. I love that example. And I think it's almost like, again, where kind of our nervous system is at and how safe and how connected we feel, right? Because I think you could walk across this similar kind of couple, right? When you're feeling more in that, when you're more disconnected or more anxious, right? And you see that other couple, it goes to that story of, ooh, we're not like that. Something's wrong. Versus when you're more connected, you might naturally be like, oh my gosh, they're so cute together. And you might just find joy and inspiration from another couple and not use it as a way to compare and despair, or not even be, like you said, not even like paying attention, right? You're not even like scanning other couples at the restaurant because you're actually just focusing on your partner.
Yeah, definitely. So really quickly, before we get into building self-trust and this piece on more confidence, as far as the thread that we were talking about a little earlier of wanting to get it right and do the right thing, and that's why we're internalizing other people's stories, have you found that you used to want to kind of get relationships right, or that you thought there was this exact formula. Like, talk to me a little bit more about your journey with that. Was that one of your biggest factors that contributed to anxiety? And then how'd you looking externally to see what other people were doing?
Oh yeah, no, I think for sure that lack of self-trust. I talk about it with my clients. I talk about like solving your relationship or testing your relationship. And it's kind of like this coin we have that we're constantly like flipping. Is it right or is it wrong? And so there'd be different variations of the test. Do we look like this other couple? Do I feel the right way today? Or, you know, did he say the thing I wanted him to say? I would come up with my own version of the test and I would be like, hey, right, wrong. Like my brain does this lots of areas of life. I didn't recognize until relationship anxiety because it was so big. But that perfectionism and that need to get things right really focused on my relationship. And I found for me, it was learning how to like stop running all the little tests to prove if it was right or wrong. To get out of that like protection mode and actually focus on connecting. Connecting to him, but also like primarily to myself, to be connected to what I am feeling and where I am at in that moment, rather than being in my head about the way it should be.
Yeah, definitely. So if someone wants to do that same thing and kind of move from the place of feeling like everything outside of them is a trigger, everything else someone else is doing, whether it's positive or a breakup, let's say, whatever it is can be a trigger for relationship anxiety. It can go both directions. So if someone wants to shift out of internalizing everything from other people and shifting into that more self-trusting place or a more confident place, what are some of the ways that you were able to shift those patterns or some of the reframes you needed to carry with you?
Okay. I have so many ideas. Okay. So one of the thoughts I had is I feel like it's creating that self-trust because self-trust is like an anchor. And so if you don't have that anchor, then we're very thrown off by the waves, right? So whenever someone says something or there's a challenge in our relationship or other people's relationships, it's like waves that we feel very up and down with. Versus when we're anchored in self-trust, which might have a little bit of anxiety, but it's not going to be the same kind of up and down. Because we have that solidness in ourselves. And if one of the things, like one of the thoughts that really helps me a lot, whenever I see something going on in someone else's relationship, whether it's something negative that I'm afraid of happening or something positive that I'm like, oh, we don't have that, is to remind myself is their story is not my story. Just simply like that phrase for me, just because that's their story doesn't mean it has to be mine. I don't have to take that on. And sometimes even the visual of like, if we imagine their story like a rock or something, they're like, we don't have to go around all day holding it, right? Just because you hear that other couple's breaking up doesn't mean you're not like, oh, I need to think about this all day. We're allowed to put the rock down. That like does not have to be the primary story we're playing. And obviously, a big part of that is learning how to like regulate yourself because I think when we are anxious, it feels really important to keep carrying that rock, right?
Yeah, definitely. So what I'm hearing you say, which I totally agree with, is like at first there needs to be two things happening. One is more of the physical, which is regulating, and then the second piece, and maybe they go hand in hand, is like more of the mental piece of creating that separation. And so it has to kind of be both. Is that what you found?
Yeah, totally. The like regulating yourself, because I think especially with watching someone go through a breakup, there's gonna be emotions. If you have relationship anxiety, it's gonna be a trigger, probably gonna dysregulate you a little bit. So knowing how to navigate that trigger, but then yeah, that mental piece of wait, I don't have to take this on. And then I think there's another layer too of sometimes underneath that initial like shock of anxiety, I think there can be emotions to process. If you have a loved one going through a divorce or like friend that broke up, I think there can be some grief with that. The sadness of, oh, I loved them. I loved that couple. I loved the time we spent together. And like, even if it's a celebrity that breaks up, you feel attached to them in some way. And so sometimes underneath that anxiety and the, oh, is this something that's going to happen to me? Underneath that fear, there can just be this sadness of like, oh, I feel sad for this other couple. I feel sad about this loss. And so sometimes like making space to let yourself also like, kind of grieve. I know that was something I had to do with my friend and watching with her relationship. But then it allowed me again to kind of carry with that, like, wait, this really isn't about me and my relationship. This is about their relationship and how I feel sad about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I found even sometimes grieving can be hard. Like you have to kind of make space for it and slow down enough to like allow your feelings to be there without judging them, which is
Yes.
really hard when you're caught in anxiety. You're trying to create a narrative around why you're feeling sad instead of
Yeah.
just allowing sadness to be there. And in a client session the other day, we just slowed down for like 15 minutes of the session, and she was able to process some sadness that was there. But at first, she associated the sadness, like, this must be sadness because I'm in the wrong relationship. And after she slowed down to actually process and feel it, she felt so much lighter and was just like, wait, this has nothing to do with anything necessarily. It's just I'm feeling sad, and like I'm feeling a sense of maybe disappointment. Like I thought I would feel happier more all the time, or like I thought things would work out more. In this example, I thought people would just always stay together and then they're sad. It's like you're allowed to just have that feeling without needing to rationalize it.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that. And I think there's that grief too, with like, even when we see something in another relationship, they're like, ooh, that looks cool. Or, oh, I wish mine had that. That, yeah, underneath there can be some grief to feel. And yeah, it doesn't mean we have to make anything wrong with our relationship at all. That grief will come in any relationship. It'll just be different forms of like, oh, I'm sad in this relationship. I don't have this. And then this other relationship, it's going to be something else. And so there's going to be expectations and things that we in our mind built up that we feel like we lost or don't get. But when we make space for feeling that grief, then we can actually move through it and enjoy what is beautiful in front of us rather than be fighting off the grief and, like you said, like intellectualizing it all the time. And why is this here?
Totally. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And back to self-trust. So I love the analogy of the anchor, and self-trust is that anchor. And without it, you're going to be in a lot of turmoil on the waves because they'll be tossing you. So, what is your definition of self-trust? Like, how does someone know what that is? Or, like, how do they cultivate more of it? Because I think I used to look at self-trust as like, oh, it's like this 10-step equation. I have to figure it all out. But I feel like trust is something a little bit different. It's not about the perfect formula. So tell me more about your thoughts on what it even means to trust yourself.
Yeah, totally. I totally get the wanting a formula for it too. I actually do have like a little mini thing that I think about with self-trust, with different components to create. But I agree, like I think at the core, it's kind of the opposite of that rigidness and that right wrong that we get into. Self-trust is a very flexible, flowy, and open. It's ultimately it's belief and confidence in yourself. And one thing I think is important to distinguish here is I think sometimes we're like, well, if I trusted myself, then I would listen to all these thoughts, these anxious thoughts. And I think that's people get confused on self-trust. But it's not just trusting the voice in your head, it's trusting your highest self. That part of you that is the most loving, compassionate, open, confident, gentle, that is what is guiding you rather than other people's voices or the protective voices in your head. And it's trusting that core essence of you rather than the fearful voices or other people.
Yeah, I love that distinction. It's like separating the thing that's driving you. Like, are you actually moving towards something, or are you listening to the thing that's trying to move you away out of fear, which
Yes.
can be sometimes hard to distinguish. Like you said, you know, that classic thought of, oh, well, is the truth that I actually shouldn't be? And then I'm just ignoring that by staying, and that's not trusting myself. So I totally get that question. Yeah, it's hard sometimes to think your way into the trust. I feel like it's more of an act, not a thought process.
Yeah, totally. And I think like the best example of trust is if you look at like a baby, because they're so dependent on their parents to do everything. And they really have to rely. I just think about like my little 20-month-old girl and how she wakes up from her nap and she just hangs out in there and she's just talking and she just, yeah, mom's gonna come get me, right? I think that naturally become very, very trusting. And then, you know, sometimes we, you know, I think we all have experiences at some point, whether it's with caregivers or like just as we get older and we meet other people, friends, other family members, teachers, right? That we like, you know, learn like, oh, people don't always treat me with love, right? Or like sometimes I get hurt by other people. That then we realize like, ooh, trusting isn't safe, right? If I trust them, if I'm confident in them, then like I could get hurt, right? But like you think about a little kid, like they just so freely like give their trust. And so I really think it is like very relaxed, and it is something we have to kind of relearn, but I do think it is something that is like very innate in us.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'd love to hear, even if there isn't a perfect formula, what are some of those components of
Yes.
self-trust that you typically share either with your community or clients?
I think sometimes self-trust can be easier to think about if we externalize it. So again, like I was kind of saying, if you think about like a parent and a child, or if you think about you with your partner, when you're thinking about it, okay, there's this separate being. Trust is I'm having confidence in them and I'm relying on them. So again, thinking about that within yourself of I can trust, I can have confidence within myself to guide and to lead. And so with trust, first is you need a relationship. You can't trust someone that you don't know. If I have no idea like who someone is, I'm not gonna have a lot of trust in them probably. It's not gonna be like the level of trust I have with my partner, right? Because I know him very well. So that's number one is that relationship. So with self-trust is thinking about you got to have that relationship with you, like really like knowing and understanding yourself. And you know, when we're so focused on what everyone else thinks and what's going on for everyone else, a lot of times that's this pseudo relationship with we're kind of trying to bypass that relationship with ourself. And I really think we'd be so much better off if we spent more time connecting to ourselves first rather than everyone outside of us. So building that relationship with you, and that can be something as simple as just like carving out time to be with you in a way that feels loving, that feels gentle, that feels connecting, and tuning in each day for like what that feels like. Again, just like if you were getting to know someone, what sounds fun for you today? Oh, I want to go out to lunch, or I want to go on a walk, or like just spending 5 minutes to meditate or journal, but creating space to slow down and get still and hear your own voice rather than filling your head with everyone else's voices.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like that's such a helpful initial distinction where it's like, in order to have a relationship, there has to be this thing you're in relationship with. But in the case of self-trust, it's the relationship with yourself. And so you have to be in a relationship with yourself, as cheesy and cliche as it sounds. You have to connect with yourself in order to feel like you can trust yourself. So even if it's as simple as your partner's like, where do you want to go out to eat tonight? Or what do you feel like doing today? If you're just like, oh, I don't know, it's like, well, then how are you ever supposed to trust yourself if you aren't able to pause and slow down and check in and share and express what feels true or what feels like you want to be doing? The word true, let's not say the word true because we know that like that can even be like, wait, what? How do I know it's true? But like what feels the thing that you want to do in that moment. Okay, I want to have Chinese food for dinner. I want to have pizza tonight. Being able to just tune in a little bit versus feeling like the other person is better at making that decision.
Yes, totally. And I think that's ultimately kind of like the opposite of self-trust or like what we deal with because we're thinking everyone else's judgment is better than our own. And so, yeah, I think like what you just said, like that's a perfect example of practicing. Like, can you even tune, okay, what do I want for dinner? Like, a really simple exercise that you can even practice is just like tuning in to your own body throughout the day to notice simple things. Ooh, my legs feel kind of tight and I've been sitting in this chair for a while. I think I need to move them. Or, oh, I'm feeling a little bit tired. Let me go lay down. And I know it seems like so simple and basic, but we override our body so much and we ignore it. And then I think it can be like easy to miss different signals, right? Of, ooh, what do I want here or here? And so like listening to just basic impulses for like needing water or I need to move, listening to those can be like a small, simple way to like say, hey, I'm listening to me. I'm not gonna listen to what's on my computer over me and my body.
Yeah, I love that. And how have you, in your experience, because I know this is some of the classic questions that we get asked, is when you're slowing down enough to kind of get those signals from your body, at what point do you trust those signals as like, oh, this is something that is important for me because it's coming through from intuition or inner wisdom versus it's coming through from an anxious place, and it's almost just a sensation that's coming up because maybe I have an emotion that needs to be processed.
Yes. Oh, that's such a good question. I think one of my other self-trust components will kind of help with that.
Okay,
But
perfect. Let's get
one
into
thing,
that then.
One idea that did come up as you're saying that, though, is I think being in tune with your body is so important because you can start to understand. I really know fear so well, and I know what it sounds like. I know how it feels in my body, right? It's like constrictive in my throat. It's heavy in my chest. Not that it's like that for everyone, but like I've spent so much time sitting with it and being with it. We run away from it so much. We don't understand it. And so we can't distinguish fear from intuition. We're just so scared of any voice in our head. And again, I think that's why we listen to everyone else and we avoid time with ourselves because we're so afraid of that fear voice. But
Yeah.
as we get to know it more, I think it loses power. It starts to soften. We can move through it more. And then there's a space that opens up. And then like you start to find something that's more comforting and warm and familiar and ooh, and it doesn't feel as urgent or rushed. And I generally find intuition doesn't tend to be super attached. It's not like, oh my gosh, you have to leave, or like, oh my gosh, it's gonna be horrible if you stay, or like it's very relaxed. And like this is the other component of trust, is it's resilient. So trust is not, I know everything is going to turn out this way. That's certainty. But if you think about a boss, if they're like over your shoulder, breathing down your neck, and hey, did you get that deadline done? Are you gonna make it? You can't miss it. You can't miss it. Actually, that kind of skips to one of my other trust ones.
No
So actually,
worries.
so it's there are three R's. So the relationship, reliance, and then resilience. So reliance is like, I'm going to ask you to do something, or I'm going to trust that you are going to get something done. So a boss might give you an assignment and say, all right, you got this. And they're not going to be down your neck, breathing, asking you questions all the time. They're going to step back. They're going to be hands off. Maybe they'll check in here and there, but they're going to rely on you to get it done. And similarly, I think that's like really how self-trust is with ourselves, is we discern, hey, I think this is anxiety here. Hey, I think this relationship is good. There's going to be doubts. There's going to be that unknown and that uncertainty and other things outside of us that may make us question. But we're not going to be like, oh, well, let me check on that again. Ooh, let me check on that again. Like that boss breathing down our shoulder. I'm going to rely on that judgment. I'm discerning here, and like, I think this is what's going on. And I'm going to trust that, and I'm not going to keep second guessing it again and again. There'll be that temptation, of course, but we have to like choose to like rely on that choice and discernment that we made.
Yeah, and also relying on the future version of ourself that if there was something majorly wrong or something that we needed to pay attention to, that we would be able to. I always feel like slightly delaying the urgency is really helpful. So I feel like that could tie in nicely to the reliance, where it's like I rely on not only the version of me that can trust now, but also the future version of me.
Okay. And that's perfect because that's actually my third one, which is resiliency, which I feel like that's what resiliency ultimately is it's relying on that future version of you of like, hey, you know what? If things don't go as planned, I'm gonna bounce back. I'm gonna be okay, right? Again, thinking about a boss that's like, hey, you know what? Even if you screw up this assignment or mess up this thing with this client, we're gonna figure it out. We're gonna navigate it. We'll manage it in that moment. That resiliency and trusting that your employee's resilient. So it's same thing with us. We're not believing we're resilient. We're like, ooh, if something happens in the future of this relationship and I can't handle that, so I need to control it right now. Versus, you know what? Even if this thing happens or that thing happens, my future version of me is going to be so capable to navigate it when it comes up. And she's going to be way more capable than me right now trying to imagine what it could be, because she's actually going to have all the puzzle pieces in that moment versus right now, all I got is today's puzzle pieces.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get that. That's like a really helpful way of remembering that, because there was some quote floating around on Reels, and now I'm forgetting what it was, but it was like my therapist told me that the version of you who needs to handle whatever is in the future will be born the moment that you need her or him to be, which I thought was really cool, because sometimes we're trying to put all the dominoes in order and carve this perfect path. But then, for example, COVID, who would have imagined that was coming? So, but we all have responded to it in different ways. And maybe some people feel like they were able to be more resilient or less resilient. But no matter what, you were able to navigate and move through it, even though it was coming out of left field.
Yes, totally. And I love that you brought that up, because I think that can be something that helps us with resiliency, is to be able to recognize areas in your life where you did navigate hard things and where you came out on the other side. Not only did you get through it, but like maybe even became stronger, or like it kind of helped define who you are. Because I think then that gives us like an approach to life of less, how do I avoid every challenge, and more like, okay, you know what? Whatever challenges come my way, it's going to be part of my growth and I'm going to be resilient through it. Whether it's
Beautiful.
COVID or hard job or other relationships.
Yeah, even with relationship anxiety, noticing moments where you've been able to move through a trigger.
Yes, totally. That helps future triggers versus to think about, I've navigated it before. So like if it comes up again, I'll know how to navigate it.
Yeah, I love it. So the three R's: relationship, reliance, and resiliency.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, any final thoughts before I get into my last couple of questions? Any final thoughts on self-trust or building confidence in our inner wisdom?
I think it hits on what you mentioned earlier, but I think presence is so key to trust. The more present we can be right here and right now, fully navigating this moment, I think that allows us to trust in future moments of like, hey, I have everything I need right here and right now. Everything in my relationship right here, right now is okay. Or even if it doesn't, even if we're in an argument or this moment's hard, being fully present and all in on supporting yourself in that moment, and it will build that trust for the future. And I really do think the more present we are, the more peace we're going to have access to. And again, that ultimately is where that trust comes in, because I think we always have what we need in the moment that we're going through things.
Totally. Even that example of an argument, if you can just be present and navigate a challenge or disagreement, then you're going to build so much more trust in yourself the next time something like that comes up, versus if you're kind of taking a present day argument and then jumping ahead, like, well, how is this going to happen in the future? Like, what if this,
Totally.
what if that? Then you're not only missing an opportunity to build self-trust by like navigating it in the present, but you're then scaring yourself and thinking about the future, which takes you out of the present. So it all is just a missed opportunity if we try to take ourselves out of what's happening in the moment, even if it's uncomfortable, and put ourselves into a potential future scenario.
Yeah. Okay, I have a story. Can I share a story with that really
Of
quick?
course,
This is
please.
totally something. So my husband's called me out on this. I didn't realize it was something I would do, but I would come up with these hypothetical scenarios before we had children. I would be like, so what if we have a 16-year-old and she's doing XYZ? How are you going to parent in that situation? And I'd look at his answer and be like, is that how I would parent? And I would test him in that way. And he called me out on it at one point and was like, you can't ask me how we're going to parent our 16-year-old that doesn't exist yet. Like, we have no idea. Like, you and I are going to be completely different people. What happens with our future children, the problems we run into might be totally different than what we're imagining. And so I've found definitely it's a lot easier to just navigate the problems and present moment rather than solve for the hypotheticals.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people can relate to that, where you're trying to check all the boxes and kind of figuring out what would this look like. But it's that reminder of the version of you who needs to handle that situation will be born in that moment. And same with your partner, and trusting, as long as you have that baseline of trust, I can trust that this is a good relationship with someone who cares. As
Yeah.
long as you trust enough, there's so much goodness that can come from just letting whatever happens happen, even though it's
Yes.
so sometimes hard to remember that.
Yeah. And the more you practice it, it's like a muscle, and it gets easier to trust you, and it gets easier to trust him, and it becomes more that you're looking inward more than outward, more
Exactly.
naturally.
Yeah, like our first wedding venue we found, I was like, yep, let's do it. And
Yeah.
it's funny because at first, I was judging myself for that. My whole message is it's okay if you don't know something is the one right away.
Yeah.
And then I found that and was like, wait, it's great, it's the one. But that doesn't mean that I had any negative relationship stuff when it was happening. It was more just that was a bigger and scarier decision. And then once I was able to trust myself more about the bigger, scarier thing, I was able to start using that self-trust muscle, like you said, in
Yeah.
other, I guess, less risk areas, like a
Yes.
venue.
Yes, no, totally. I think that is a byproduct of this work, is like it does like these different decisions that maybe like before you would have overthought a lot. You've built that self-trust muscle, so it feels more easy and natural to make other choices all of a sudden.
Totally. Well, last couple of questions here, because this is the You Love and You Learn podcast. One thing I ask all my guests is, what is one thing that you have learned about love that you would want to leave listeners
Oh, one thing.
with?
One of the things I always think about is that there's a quote from Rumi that I really, really like. I actually have it in this guide that I made, and hopefully I can quote it right. But basically, he says, in order to love, all we have to do is discover our blocks to loving and fully embracing them. And I love that visual because I just think about, I feel like sometimes we're like, oh, I got to fight to love or I got to figure out love. But like, I think love is something so innate and natural in all of us. And it's not something you have to get to, but rather just like recognizing, okay, where are my barriers to it? Where I feel like that protection and understanding and healing that. And then naturally, love just flows from there. I really like that concept.
I like that too. And it feels a little bit more doable. It's like, okay, I can see what things are preventing me from love. And like you said, it's not something that you have to chase. It's something that is within you. And then it becomes a matter of recognizing when you're blocked from the thing that you have within you.
Yes. And then I think it also helps because then you don't have to be like, oh my gosh, we fell out of love, or I don't love him anymore, but rather recognizing, ooh, like my heart just closed off. Like I just feel like there's that protection that came up right now, but the love's still there. It's still underneath. It's still something we can tap into just because you're maybe not having access to it in that moment.
Yeah, really good point. Beautiful. Well, where can people stay connected with you if they want to learn more after our chat?
Yeah. Okay. So they can find me on Instagram at Mikkel Kristen. And I also have a free guide at relationshipanxiety.com/guide to love. And that's a fun little guide to help you kind of work on the finding your blocks to love and releasing them more.
Really cool. Well, I'll have to link that in the show notes since you mentioned that I think the quote was in that guide. So people can get access to that. Really cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And thanks everyone for listening. We will catch you in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening to the You Love and You Learn podcast. If you've been enjoying the podcast, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could rate and review the podcast, because the more ratings and reviews there are, the more people that can hear this message. And it's really important to me to get this message out to the world and to create a space where people can learn about love and relationships in a way that is not judgmental, in a way that helps them expand their perspective from the cultural narratives that we've heard and seen in the movies and in Hollywood and the media. And the more ratings and reviews that are there, the more people that can hear this message. So thank you again so much. It really means the world to me that you are listening, and see you in the next episode.